WUKY's Dr. Greg Davis on Medicine has the support of the Pain Treatment Center of the Bluegrass. The Pain Treatment Center specializes in acute and chronic pain management to help people live a pain-free life. More information at pain-ptc.com.
WUKY presents health news you can use. It's Dr. Greg Davis on Medicine.
Patients with chronic disease, including neurologic patients, can often have suicidal thoughts and ideation. I recently spoke with Dr. Lisa Kale, UK Assistant Professor of Neurology, a neuropsychologist and neuropsychology training director, about suicidality in neurologic patients. Lisa, thank you so much for talking with me today. And I wanted to visit with you a little bit about some of your work regarding suicidality in neurologic patients. Can you talk with me a little bit about that and what we as clinicians, family members, friends need to be aware of?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me on today. This is such an important topic, and I'm very grateful to be able to discuss it with you. As we know, suicidality is a major issue. It's about the 10th leading cause of death right now in the United States, which unfortunately with a pandemic is also growing. In particular, neurological populations have a very, very high risk of suicide due to a number of different factors. You think about neurological disease and disorders, oftentimes there's a cognitive component where gradually people lose their cognitive functions, such as thinking, executive abilities, processing speed, everything that sort of makes us who we are at our core. You also see a good deal of physical disability. You see lack of future plans. You can see some uncertainty, some gray zones in diagnoses, in prognosis. There are a lot of very chronic debilitating diseases in neurological populations. And it unfortunately puts people at very high risk of suicidality.
And so we could be talking about disorders ranging from post-COVID long-haul neurologic symptoms to perhaps Alzheimer's disease, Parkinson's disease, things like that.
Absolutely. So, of course, we're so early in the pandemic that we have yet to see what will come of long-haul COVID symptoms, but I do anticipate that for those individuals who have particularly debilitating rounds of COVID, we might see some of the suicidality increase over time. Some other populations within neurology that are really high risk are folks who have multiple sclerosis, people who have traumatic brain injuries, especially those of higher severity, so in the moderate to severe range, and if they've had intracranial hemorrhages or bleeding, and it's particularly in the right frontal area of the brain, those folks are at pretty high risk of suicidality because of neurological changes and, again, because of physical and cognitive deficits that are attributable to the injury. You also see a good amount of suicidality in stroke, but in this case, it's about 5 years post-stroke that people really start to have stronger bouts of depression that might lead to some suicidal behaviors. Oftentimes, again, this is because people around that five-year mark start to realize that their deficits at that point are unfortunately stable, and they're not seeing as much improvement as they had earlier in the process of recovering from that stroke. We also see a good deal of suicidality in people with Huntington's disease, people with epilepsy, people with migraine with aura. You mentioned Parkinson's disease. We actually see higher suicidality, but less frequency of suicide attempts or completed suicides, oftentimes because Parkinson's disease just, the folks seem to have a very positive outlook, and they often can hold on and seek out really strong support groups and different groups that are available with Parkinson's disease. You also see a much longer prognosis for a lot of folks with Parkinson's disease, where their disease burden doesn't become very high until much longer and later into the disease progression. With dementia, we do sometimes see suicidality, especially in the earlier to moderate stages of the disease, particularly with people with Alzheimer's disease pathology. That's one of the strongest frequencies of suicidality that we see a correlation with.
And when we say suicidality, is that synonymous with suicidal ideation or suicidal thoughts, or does that mean something different?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So these are going to be people who have a high degree of suicidal ideation. And when we're talking about suicidal ideation, we're really thinking about the whole kind of course of process of thought. So suicidal ideation could be anywhere from having some passive thoughts of death without a lot of intent, And as suicidal ideation becomes stronger, you start to see more intent to complete suicide. They might be having more intense ideations of death or thoughts of death, more frequent thoughts of death or suicide. And you might see the duration lasting longer, so these thoughts are harder for them to shake off, per se, or to distract themselves from. And then you start to have increased intent. So these are the ideas that people are really, really likely to act on the ideas or thoughts of death or suicide that they're having. When we become very, very concerned is when we see people with a high degree of active suicidal ideation with strong intensity, high frequency, strong intent to act. And then as we reach the point of planning, then it's time to become quite concerned, especially if the plan has a highly lethal context. So things that are likely to result in death if someone were to attempt.
So one thing we've talked about on the show before is that it's always helpful to just ask. I think there's a persistent myth out there that if we ask a patient or a loved one or a friend, are you thinking of harming yourself? Are you thinking of suicide? That somehow that will plant the idea in their head. But that's absolutely not the case, correct?
You are absolutely right. Yeah, the literature shows us time and time again the importance of, like you said, simply asking. And as clinicians, we can use very structured, nice templates or screeners, but the most important piece is simply to ask. If someone is starting to have suicidal ideation, asking as a clinician or a family member or friend is never going to increase thoughts of suicide, but it could give a potential outlet. It could be that point in time that person discloses to you that they are having some scary thoughts, and you can offer some support, some guidance, and some help. So it's always, always critical to simply ask about whether or not someone's thinking about hurting themselves.
And oftentimes that's a catalyst for conversation and even a point of relief, perhaps, for the person that, oh my gosh, at least finally I can talk to somebody about this.
Absolutely. It's very critical.
Well, Lisa, is there anything that you wanted to get out there to our listeners before we part?
Yeah, you've addressed many of them. And again, one of the most important pieces is making sure that, especially as clinicians, but again, as family members and friends, we do keep thoughts of suicide at the forefront. It's not something that we can just dismiss or pretend like it doesn't exist, especially when you have anybody with a highly complex medical diagnosis. If you see some sadness in that individual, or you see any signs of risk, any major changes in that person's life, like loss of a job, loss of physical or cognitive abilities, major shifts in life circumstances, and you're seeing the sadness there, check in. Check in with that person. Ask them how they're doing. Be a good support. Help them find supports outside of their home environment. So help them find a good therapist or a good physician who can help them get on some medications. But always do make sure to ask. That's the most important and critical thing you can do when you're worried about someone's mental health and well-being.
My thanks today to Dr. Lisa Kale, UK Assistant Professor of Neurology, for talking with me about suicidality in neurologic patients. Please remember the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline, 1-800-273-8255, 800-273-TALK. They have free and confidential support for people in distress, prevention and crisis resources for you and your loved ones, and best practices for professionals. With health news you can use, I'm Dr. Greg Davis on Medicine.
Dr. Greg Davis is a forensic pathologist at the University of Kentucky who volunteers his time to cover important medical news for our community. This program is available as a podcast at wuky.org.